Yes, I've just joined you. Good morning to you all.
Good morning, all. Lorraine is going to do the recording for us.
Okay.
So that's the cunning plan. How's it all going, Pip?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster couple of weeks. The boat's coming along nicely. Obviously, the race finished about a couple of days ago. But yeah, sort of just in the final countdown, really, and just looking forward to getting going now.
Cool. What I thought we would do is I'll do a short introduction, and then we'll ask you some questions, and then I'll sort of close at the end, if that's all right with you?
Yeah, no problem at all, yeah.
Cool. Okay, I mean, the plan for us is to actually put this on our website. So what I'll do is I'll introduce myself first and then sort of take it on from there. Hello, my name is Anil Kanani. I am the chairman of the Visually Impaired Sailing Association. Our aim is to empower, encourage visually impaired adults to take part in and enjoy offshore sailing. Today we're interviewing our patron, an ocean racer, journalist, professional sailing coach, Pip Hare. With us, we have Keith Sims, also known as Lofty to Many. He's one of our trustees and our marketing guru. He also was instrumental in getting Pip to become our patron. Welcome, Pip, and thank you very much for joining us today and taking time out of your very busy and grueling schedule.
Pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. May I start by asking what got you into sailing?
So I think I was introduced to sailing when I was very young, but sort of didn't. I enjoyed being on the water, but sailing as a sport didn't really grab me. And I think I first really got into it when I was a teenager, so 16, 17 years old. I went on a holiday, a sailing holiday, run by young people, for young people. And I think I was just really struck by this incredible freedom that you get on the water. You know, when you're a teenager, you're sort of looking for ways that you can take responsibility and have freedom, and yet you're very sort of, you know, you're trapped by your age, really. And when you get into a sailing boat, you can make decisions, you can take control, you can take risks. And I guess from there, I started thinking about all of the things that, you know, sailing would allow me to do and all the freedom that
take
would allow
control,
me.
You can take risks and take...
That's great. I mean, I took it up when I was 54, so it's good to hear some people are taking off at a very young age. What sort of hurdles did you face when you started out, and how did you overcome them?
So, I mean, I grew up in Cambridgeshire, you know, I didn't have access to sailing clubs or any sort of access to the coast or anything like that. So I think the biggest hurdle for me really was just understanding, you know, how I could go sailing. As soon as I found it as a sport, I wanted to do as much as I possibly could. And so it was understanding where those opportunities were and how I could actually get to go out on the water. And initially, while I was still at school, I sort of addressed that by taking jobs. I worked on either side of the school day and I worked the weekends, and I saved up enough money for a train fare and then went down to the South Coast every weekend I could, and I volunteered to go sailing on various different boats, just to try and get some miles on the water. And that was sort of the way that I got myself into it and got the experience I was looking for.
When you said you volunteered, what sort of volunteering did you do?
Well, I was initially sort of introduced to the concept of volunteering through an organisation that was called the Seamanship Foundation. which was sort of the forerunner to Sailability. So it was part of the RYA, and it offered sailing to young people, but it also offered sailing to people with various physical disabilities. So they had a catamaran that was adapted to take wheelchairs. They did sailing for the blind, and they did they took deaf groups out as well. And they were always looking for volunteers just to help man those vessels. And I'd had an introduction to the Seamanship Foundation through my own holiday for young people, and really I just sort of took off with them. They were always looking for extra hands on the boats, and I just said yes to as much as I could.
Yeah, so you've got some experience with helping visually impaired sailors, is that right?
I do, yes, both from the Seamanship Foundation, but also I did a stint on the Lord Nelson as well. And so, yes, I've been lucky enough to sail with visually impaired sailors before.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Now, you're taking the, or you're doing the race, the One Day Globe Challenge. Can you say a little bit about it and what inspired you to take part in it?
So the Vendée Globe race is, it's run every 4 years, and it's a single-handed non-stop around the world race, sailed in the Amoca class, which is a boat that's a bit long and sort of a high-performance ocean race boat. And it's pretty much the toughest ocean race in the world. Only 87 people have ever finished it, and I think I was inspired to take part really is from the moment I read it, because it just appeared to me to be one of the, you know, the hardest races that you could possibly consider as a sailor, and that appealed to me. But also it's run completely on equal terms, so there's no male class or female class. It's just everybody enters on equal terms, and I really liked that idea as well.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Sounds like a very, very tough challenge.
Yeah, I bet you know in 3 months.
I also believe that there are two other British women taking part in the challenge with you. Samantha Davies and Miranda Merron.
So in total, there are four British sailors in the race, and three of us are women. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Quite a high percentage. How competitive are you with each other?
I mean, we're all out there to race, and so when we get on the water, then we will be racing each other. But, you know, the other thing I think to understand about solo sailors is that, you know, very often, particularly when we get down to the Southern Ocean, where there really isn't much traffic and we're miles and miles away from anyone who might be able to provide assistance, then, you know, we will be each other's support net. So there's a terrific camaraderie amongst the entire fleet. But that said, you know, we're definitely racing each other as well.
Of course, yeah. Thank you very much for that. I think Lofty has a few questions to ask you as well. So over to you, Lofty.
Hi, thank you. Hi, Pip. It's a shame that we're not doing this on video, because you would have seen my Captain Pugwash pyjamas.
I've missed. Hi.
I was also going to add, because Anil was trying to get in now, but I was also going to add, when Anil started sailing, the first person he slept with was me. So we've got quite a connection.
Don't tell everyone our secrets.
This is an absolutely incredible and amazing thing that you're doing, and I think all of people from Visa especially are interested in keen, because there is a comparison between, you know, what you take on and equal people that you're racing with. You know, you mentioned being a woman, and, you know, there's no differences between men and women, and there's no differences between what blind people can do sailing and yourself. Would you obviously can see the comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I think sailing is an incredible sport because it offers this huge diversity across how you sail, how you can sail, and it just offers, you know, a freedom to so many people and the ability to perform on equal terms as well. And, you know, I think what's incredible is how, having, you know, had the experience of sailing with visually impaired people, not a huge amount, but you know, sailing a bit with them, and you know, many of the times when I'm coaching people to sail, I tell them to close their eyes and to feel the boat more, to use the boat more, because actually, you know, sight is only one way that we can trim the boat. And yeah. I think it's a fantastic sport for many people for many reasons.
What sort of preparation are you doing currently, apart from meetings? You know, are you preparing the actual course that you're going to do? And what have you been able to do to the boat recently to, you know, to bring it up to what you require for the race?
It's been pretty non-stop, and we are working on the boat every single day because there's always something that you can do. So in the last 2 weeks, we've made some adjustments to the sails. We've been fine-tuning the electronics on board. All of the systems providers, while the race village was open, sort of came down and gave health checks to everything. We are doing things like putting marks on my sheets. So in the middle of the night, if, you know, if I'm really tired and I get in a mess with the sail trim, I know exactly how I can put the ropes back to where they were. And now I'm restricted now as to how much I'm allowed to go down to the boat, because we've got a COVID protocol in place which doesn't allow me to visit the boat other than in the evening. So now I'm just going down in the evening, and I'm sort of generally sorting the boat out. I'm looking at the weather. I'm putting everything in place. We're sort of just starting to just sort of final preparations, really.
That's, you know, it's amazing the work that you do. And if you had many people helping you do the preparation.
I've got a small team. I mean, in terms of Vendée Globe, my team is small. You know, Alex Thompson, who's the other British entry, he's got like 26 or 27 people working for him at one time. And my team, I've got 5 people working on the, but other sort of other friends have come down and are supporting, and so it's a small but perfectly formed team.
Anil mentioned obviously Sam Davis and Miranda, and what is it going to be like, your competition? How fast does your boat go compared with like Sam's with the foils? Because I imagine, well, you said that she will do 30, 35 knots. But what we try to maintain around the
road. So my boat is one of the 2 oldest in the fleet. And so, you know, it is significantly slower than something like Sam's boat. And I've been, a lot of the work that I've been doing is around, you know, theoretically we can't really make the boat go any faster, but what we can make it do is be consistently fast. And that's what we've been working on. So when I'm in the Southern Ocean, I'm hoping to be averaging sort of between 18 and 20 knots, hopefully.
Yeah, that is very, very quick. I once achieved 13 knots on a boat, and I thought I was going quick. And yeah, it is, you know, it's quite amazing, the speed against your competitors. And you know, you've got to be more consistent than them, and generally you've got to sail better, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's the interesting thing about the Vendée Globe race is that 45% of competitors statistically won't finish. So there's a lot about consistency, but also it's a huge exercise in problem solving.
and making sure that you know, you catch every problem before it escalates and you have a solution for everything that will break on the boat. And one of the strengths of my boat is it's old, but it's really, really strong and it's very simple. So I'm hoping that will help me be one of the 55% that finishes.
Yeah, well, we all hope so, and I'm sure you will. When I pulled, when I actually moored my boat behind yours, well, I think it was August last year, you know, you were very interested in showing us around, and you basically took the whole of the crew on board to actually have a look at your boat, and it is amazing of what you do, what you haven't got. It is. And I I've told, you know, loads of people that when I went onto your boat, and Anil was there as well, and you know, it was I just couldn't believe. And are you still sleeping on your beanbag?
Yes, yeah, I do have a chair now as well.
That's why I mentioned it, because you have mentioned the chair.
Yeah, I've got a chair, but I actually still prefer to sleep on the beanbag on the floor. I think I need to sort of, the chair seems to be a point of frustration with the guy who looks after my boat, because he's like, we went to a lot of effort to put that chair in, and every time I see you, you're on the floor. So I need to grow a chair.
there are times when you need to, you know, you stretch your back and just, you know, look after your stance, and to actually sit down on something with a back to it is, obviously, you know, you obviously think it's a good idea.
Yes, yeah, no, I think I will grow to love my chair. I just haven't had enough time before.
Well, you'll have enough time in, you know, three and a bit months or whatever it is. The other thing, of course, that you haven't got is a proper head.
No, it's proper bucket and tap, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I was just wondering how you actually do that in the Southern Ocean, you know, when the wind's chucking down at 30 knots or something.
Carefully.
Good answer. I won't go into that anymore. How much have you actually, you mentioned a lot of the preparation that you've done on the boat, but I mean, you've changed the complete rigging, haven't you? That's one thing that you've totally changed. And have you done anything to your auto helm? Is there anything special you've been able to add to your auto helm? Because that's obviously so important.
Yes, so I upgraded my auto helm to the latest generation. It's an off-the-shelf deal by a company, French company called NKE. I upgraded to their latest sort of high-spec off-the-shelf pilot, and it is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. That thing can steer the boat so much better than me when I'm tired, and it's more reliable, and there's more capacity for redundancy, so I'm very happy with it.
More capacity with redundancy. Go on, explain that one for me.
So, obviously, if the pilot stops functioning, then my race is over, effectively. And there are many different components which feed into the pilot to enable you to perform. And if any one of those components falls over, then that might knock my pilot out. And so, for example, my pilot is able to steer to a wind direction. And I have three wind wands. So I have two on the top of the mast, and I have a third emergency that I can put on the back of the boat, so I manually install that. And my new pilot has a clever little box that will automatically switch between these wands. If one gets knocked out, it goes to the second. If that gets knocked out, it goes to the third. So in that way, there's a seamless transition, and I'll never be stuck without the pilot. And I have that across everything. So I've got two speed sensors, four hydraulic rams, two internal computers. It goes on and on and on, just all of this incredible redundancy.
But is it right that you have to move the keel by hand?
Yes. I'm in the only boat in the fleet that does that. I have an electric winch, but I have to manhandle it around using ropes, a block and tackle, which makes it much more difficult for me to sail the boat in terms of what's expected of me as a person. However, I don't have to worry about breakdown of hydraulic systems, which has previously been a problem for competitors.
Okay. I mean, that again is another, you know, a big hands-on thing that you've got, you know, you've got to do that the all the other competitors haven't. What will you actually miss when you're sailing from the, you know, from the land? What will you remember and look at and think about while you're actually? I know that there's very, very little time to relax. I can understand that. And are you still sleeping an hour on and an hour off?
So it's 30 minutes normally at a time I will sleep for. I think the only thing really that I really miss is fresh fruit, because all of my food is freeze-dried. You miss that amazing
luxury.
When you bite into a piece of fresh fruit or something that's really juicy. But I mean, other than that, I'm in my element, so I don't really miss that.
No, this is, as you say, this is something that you really, really want to do, and that's why you're there in the race. So apart from winning the race, what else would you really like to get from the experience? Are you looking towards, you know, competing with everybody and taking part with everybody? But you do have a reason to actually complete the race and become the first across the line. So what are your feelings thinking about that?
So I guess, you know, in terms of my objectives, you know, with the understanding that I have a 20-year-old boat. So the reality is, you know, unless something very badly has gone wrong for everybody else in the fleet, I'm not going to win this race. And, you know, one thing we all know from being out at sea is you never wish bad things on anybody else, ever.
That's right.
So, you know, my performance goal would be to try and do it in less than 94 days, which was the time set by Ellen MacArthur in the year 2000.
That's
a good benchmark to go for, but also this is a big learning exercise for me, because my intention is to compete in 2024 with a foiling boat, and the more I can learn on this race and the better decisions I will make in the build up for my next race. But the other thing also is that I would really like to share the story of this race in a way that is accessible and a way that will increase the interest, the general public's interest in this sport, because I think sometimes looking from the outside in, sailing seems inaccessible to so many people, and yet it's just not that. It's a sport that is, as I said, you know, it's incredibly diverse. It can offer so much to so many people. It's a fantastic way to get out on the water, to feel freedom, to do sporting competition, to meet people. And I just want to share the human side of the story and make as many people as possible look at sailing and think that could be a sport for me.
Yeah, excellent. And as you say, so diverse to include every type of ability and disability. That's that fantastic. So apart from when you actually cross the line, I was going to ask you, you know, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to drink a bottle of champagne, but in your case, you'll probably want an apple, will you?
Cherry tomatoes, actually. That's the thing.
Right. I think I've said my bits, and I'll pass back to Anil. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Lofty. And thanks very much, Pip. That was really, really interesting. A couple of more sort of questions from me before we sort of conclude, because I'm conscious of the time. Now, we're very proud that you, earlier this year, agreed to become our patron. What made you want to take it on?
Lofty ringing endlessly.
He thanked you, did he?
to be a patron of a charity, and it's not something I'd actually considered before. And so I did think about it hard, and I tried to understand what that would mean for me and what that would mean for you, and, you know, how we could work together and I could support you. And I think, you know, one of the reasons why I'm really happy to be the patron of Visa GB is because it's this concept of freedom and sailing for everyone. And I, you know, I think that sailing can offer the most incredible opportunities. We just need to develop them. We need to get the boats on the water. We need to get the volunteers out helping. We need to encourage people to believe that this is a sport for them. And once they've tried it, I just don't think they will ever go back. And so, you know, your message is so similar to my message. And I, you know, if I can help get more visually impaired people on the water, but also get, you know, people with sight along to experience, you know, the helping somebody engage with this sport, then, you know, I just want to do as much as I can.
Sure. And what would you say to our sort of members to actually look at Visa to do the sailing, you know, inspire them to come with Visa?
I think just grab, you know, it's like, I guess, like I felt when I was first getting into sailing. There are so many opportunities. Grab them with both hands. Go and live it. Go and try it. Because, I mean, for starters, sailing has never failed to lift my spirits, ever. I have honestly never had a time on the water where I've just been thinking, I don't want to be here, this is terrible. You know, I think there's something about being out in the fresh air, feeling the boat underneath you. You know, that is an incredibly beautiful feeling, I think. But also, you know, there is just this freedom of the ability to make decisions, to risk take, to push hard or not to push hard. And it's all there. There's an amazing path for progression as well, to just keep getting better. Sailing is one of those sports where you can always learn something, you can always get better. And so don't be shy, I would say. Just take all the opportunities you can and get stuck in.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you. And as I said, I've only been sailing for a few years, and in that time, I've noticed that with the people that sell with Visa, a lot of them have got very, very good. They can do it without any help from any sort of sighted person or at the helm. They know when to ask to, you know, drop the sails, change the sails, and rigging and all that sort of stuff. They're very good at that. So, you know, what you've just said about also, you know, going out there and getting the freedom is brilliant. So thank you very much for that. One final question. How can we follow your progress on the challenge?
So the Vendée Globe Race has its own website that has all of the news from all the competitors on it and a tracker, and that's vendeglobe.org. But I have also, I'll be sharing my news on my social media channels, which are Pip Hare Ocean Racing.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you very much for all your time, Pip. On behalf of our trustees and our members, I'd like to thank you again for sparing the time to speak to us and for being our patron. We're really proud to have you on board. Good luck with the race. And we all hope that the wind is blowing in the right direction for a Pip Hare victory. So best of luck, and we hope to see you or chat to you and actually watch the progress that you're making over the months, and then hopefully next year we'll get a chance to meet. So thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Thanks, Pip. Well done. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Brilliant.
Okay.
Cheers, Pip. All the best.
All right, bye. Huh.
It has stopped recording.
No, I said, did you